We're starting chapter one of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Chapter one is called The Other Minister. It was nearing midnight, and the Prime Minister was sitting alone in his office, reading a long memo that was slipping through his brain without leaving the slightest trace of meaning behind. He was waiting for the call from the president of a far distant country, and between wondering when the wretched man would telephone and trying to suppress unpleasant memories of what had been a very long, tiring, and difficult week, there was not much space in his head for anything else. The more he attempted to focus on the print on the page before him, the more clearly the Prime Minister could see the gloating face of one of his political opponents. This particular opponent had appeared on the news that very day not only to enumerate all the terrible things that had happened in the last week, as though anyone needed reminding, but also to explain why each and every one of them was the government's fault. The Prime Minister's pulse quickened at the very thought of these accusations, for they were neither fair nor true. How on earth was his government supposed to have stopped that bridge collapsing? It was outrageous for anyone to suggest they were not spending enough on bridges. The bridge was fewer than 10 years old, and the best experts were at a loss to explain why it had snapped cleanly in two, sending a dozen cars into the watery depths of the river below. And how dare anyone suggest that it was the lack of policemen that had resulted in those two very nasty and well-publicized murders? Or that the government should somehow have foreseen the freak hurricane in the West Country that had caused so much damage to both people and property? Was it his fault that one of his junior ministers, Herbert Chorley, had chosen this week to act so peculiarly that he was now going to spend a lot more time with his family? A grim mood has gripped the country, the opponent had concluded, barely concealing his own broad grin. Unfortunately, this was perfectly true. The Prime Minister felt it himself. People really did seem more miserable than usual. Even the weather was dismal, all this chilly mist in the middle of July. It wasn't right, it wasn't normal. He went over the second page of the memo, saw how much longer it went on, and gave it up as a bad job. Stretching his arms over his head, he looked around his office mournfully. It was a handsome room, with a fine marble fireplace facing the long sash windows, firmly closed against the unseasonable chill. With a slight shiver, the Prime Minister got up and moved over to the window, looking out at the thin mist that was pressing itself against the glass. It was then that he stood with his back to the room, that he heard a soft cough behind him. He froze, nose to nose, with his own scared-looking reflection in the dark glass. He knew that cough. He had heard it before. He turned very slowly to face the empty room. "Hello," he said, trying to sound braver than he felt. For a brief moment, he allowed himself the impossible hope that nobody would answer him. However, a voice responded at once, a crisp, decisive voice that sounded as though it were reading a prepared statement. It was coming, as the Prime Minister had known at the first cough, from the frog-like little man wearing a long silver wig who was depicted in a small dirty oil painting in the far corner of the room. "To the Prime Minister of Muggles, urgent we meet. Kindly respond immediately. Sincerely, Fudge." The man in the painting looked inquiringly at the Prime Minister. Said the Prime Minister. "Listen, it's not a very good time for me. I'm waiting for a telephone call, you see, from the President of..." "That can be rearranged," said the portrait at once. The Prime Minister's heart sank. He'd been afraid of that. "But I really was rather hoping to speak..." "We shall arrange for the President to forget to call. He will telephone tomorrow night instead," said the little man. "Kindly respond immediately to Mr. Fudge." "Oh, very well," said the Prime Minister weakly. "Yes, I'll see Fudge." He hurried back to his desk, straightening his tie as he went. He had barely resumed his seat and arranged his face in what he hoped was a relaxed and unfazed expression, when bright green flames burst into life in the empty grate beneath his marble mantelpiece. He watched, trying not to betray a flicker of surprise or alarm, as a portly man appeared within the flames, spinning as fast as a top. Seconds later, he had climbed out onto a rather fine antique rug, brushing ash from the sleeves of his long pinstriped cloak, a lime-green bowler hat in his hand. "Ah, Prime Minister," said Cornelius Fudge, striding forward with his hand outstretched. Good to see you again. The Prime Minister could not honestly return this compliment, so he said nothing at all. He was not remotely pleased to see Fudge, whose occasional appearances, apart from being downright alarming in themselves, generally meant that he was about to hear some very bad news. Furthermore, Fudge was looking distinctly careworn. He was thinner, balder, and grayer, and his face had a crumpled look. The Prime Minister had seen that kind of look in politicians before, and it never boded well. "How can I help you?" he said, shaking Fudge's hand very briefly, and gesturing toward the hardest of chairs in front of the desk. "Difficult to know where to begin," muttered Fudge, pulling up to the chair, sitting down and placing his green bowler hat on his knees. "What a week, what a week." "Had a bad week, too, have you?" asked the Prime Minister stiffly, hoping to convey by this that he had quite enough on his plate without any extra helpings from Fudge. "Yes, of course," said Fudge, rubbing his eyes wearily and looking morosely at the Prime Minister. "I've been having the same week you have, Prime Minister. The Brockdale Bridge, the Bones and Vance murders, not to mention the ruckus in the West County. Some of your people were involved in these things, were they?" Fudge fixed the Prime Minister with a rather stern look. "Of course they were," he said. "Surely you've realized what's going on." "I," hesitated the Prime Minister. It was precisely this sort of behavior that made him dislike Fudge's visits so much. He was, after all, the Prime Minister, and did not appreciate being made to feel like an ignorant schoolboy. But of course it had been like this from his very first meeting with Fudge on his very first evening as Prime Minister. He remembered as though it were yesterday, and knew it would haunt him until the day he died. He had been standing alone in this very office, savoring the triumph that was his after so many years of dreaming and scheming, when he heard a cough behind him, just like tonight, and turned to find the ugly little portrait talking to him and announcing that the Minister of Magic was about to arrive and introduce himself. Naturally, he had thought that the long campaign and the strain of the election had caused him to go mad. He had been utterly terrified to find a portrait talking to him, though this had been nothing to how he felt when a self-proclaimed wizard had bounced out of the fireplace and shaken his hand. He had remained speechless through Fudge's kindly explanations that there were witches and wizards still living in secret all over the world, and his reassurances that he was not to bother his head about them, as the Ministry of Magic took responsibility for the whole wizarding community and prevented the non-magical population from getting wind of them. It was, said Fudge, a difficult job that encompassed everything from regulations on the responsible use of broomsticks to keeping the dragon population under control. The Prime Minister remembered clutching the desk for support at this point. Fudge had then patted the shoulder of the still dumbstruck Prime Minister in a fatherly sort of way. "Not to worry," he had said. "It's odds on you'll never see me again. I'll only bother you if there's something really serious going on our end, something that's likely to affect the Muggles, the non-magical population, I should say. Otherwise, it's live and let live. And I must say, you're taking it a lot better than your predecessor. He tried to throw me out the window, though I thought I was a hoax planned by the opposition." At this, the Prime Minister found his voice at last. You're not a hoax, then?" It had been his last desperate hope. "No," said Fudge gently. "No, I'm afraid I'm not. Look." And he had turned the Prime Minister's teacup into a gerbil. "But," said the Prime Minister breathlessly, watching his teacup chewing on the corner of his next speech. "But why has nobody told me?" "The Minister of Magic only reveals him or herself to the Muggle Prime Minister of the day," said Fudge, poking his wand back inside his jacket. "We find it the best way to maintain secrecy." "But then," bleated the Prime Minister, "why hasn't a former Prime Minister warned me?" At this, Fudge actually laughed. "My dear Prime Minister, are you ever going to tell anybody?" Still chortling, Fudge had thrown some powder into the fireplace, and stepped into the emerald flames, and vanished with a whooshing sound. The Prime Minister had stood there quite motionless, and realized that he would never, as long as he lived, dare mention this encounter to a living soul, for who in the whole wide world would believe him? The shock had taken a little while to wear off. For a time, he tried to convince himself that Fudge had indeed been a hallucination brought on by lack of sleep during his grueling election campaign. In a vain attempt to rid himself of all reminders of this uncomfortable encounter, he had given the gerbil to his delighted niece and instructed his private secretary to take down the portrait of the little ugly man who had announced Fudge's arrival. To the Prime Minister's dismay, however, the portrait had proved impossible to remove. When several carpenters, a builder or two, an art historian, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer had all tried unsuccessfully to prise it from the wall, the Prime Minister had abandoned the attempt and simply resolved to hope that the thing remained motionless and silent for the rest of his term. Occasionally, he could have sworn he saw out of the corner of his eye the occupant of the painting yawning or else scratching his nose, even once or twice simply walking out of the frame and leaving nothing but a stretch of muddy brown canvas behind him. However, he had trained himself not to look at the picture very much, and always tell himself firmly that his eyes were playing tricks on him when anything like this happened. Then, 3 years ago, on a night very much like tonight, the Prime Minister had been alone in his office when the portrait had once again announced the imminent arrival of Fudge, who had burst out of the fireplace, sopping wet in a state of considerable panic. Before the Prime Minister could ask why he was dripping all over the Axminster, Fudge had started ranting about a prison the Prime Minister had never heard of, a man named Sirius Black, or something that sounded like Hogwarts, a boy called Harry Potter, none of which made the remotest sense to the Prime Minister. "I've just come from Azkaban," Fudge had panted, tipping a large amount of water out of the rim of his bowler hat into his pocket. "Middle of the North Sea, you know, nasty flight. The Dementors are in an uproar," he shuddered. "They've never had a breakout before. Anyhow, I had to come to you, Prime Minister. Black's a known muggle killer, and may be planning to rejoin Unohu. But of course, you don't even know who Unohu is." He gazed helplessly at the Prime Minister for a moment, and then said, "Well, sit down, I'll better fill you in. Have a whiskey." The Prime Minister rather resented being told to sit down in his own office, let alone offered his own whiskey, but he sat down nonetheless. Fudge pulled out his wand, conjured two large glasses full of amber liquid out of thin air, and pushed one of them into the Prime Minister's hand, and drew up a chair. Fudge had talked for more than an hour. At one point he refused to say a certain name aloud, and wrote it instead on a piece of parchment, which he had thrust into the Prime Minister's whiskey-free hand. When at last Fudge had stood up to leave, the Prime Minister stood up too. "So you think," he squinted down at the name in his left hand, "Lord Vold—" "He must not be named," snarled Fudge. "I'm sorry, you think he must not be named is still alive, then?" "Well, Dumbledore says he is," said Fudge, who, as he had fastened his pinstriped cloak under his chin, "we've never found him. If you ask me, he's not dangerous unless he's got support. So it's Black we ought to be worrying about. We put out a warning then. Excellent. Well, I hope we don't see each other again. Good night, Prime Minister." But they had seen each other again. Less than a year later, a harassed-looking Fudge had appeared out of thin air in the cabinet room to inform the Prime Minister that there had been a spot of bother at Quidditch, really, that was what it sounded like, at the Quidditch World Cup, and that several muggles had been, quote, involved, but that the Prime Minister was not to worry. The fact that, you know, whose mark was seen again meant nothing. Fudge sure was an isolated incident, and the muggle liaison office was dealing with all memory modifications as they spoke. "Oh, and I almost forgot," Fudge added. "We're importing three foreign dragons and a sphinx for the Triwizard Tournament. Quite routine. But the Department of the Regulation of Magic and Control of Magical Creatures tells me it's down to the rulebook that we have to notify you of that if we're bringing highly dangerous creatures into the country." "What, dragons?" spluttered the Prime Minister. "Yes, three," said Fudge. "And a sphinx. Well, good day to you." The Prime Minister had hoped, beyond hope, that the dragons and sphinxes would be the worst of it. But no. Less than 2 years later, Fudge had erupted out of the fire again, this time with news that there had been a mass breakout at Azkaban. "A mass breakout," repeated the Prime Minister, hoarsely. No need to worry, no need to worry, shouted Fudge, already with one foot in the flames. We'll have them all rounded up in no time, just thought you ought to know. And before the Prime Minister could shout, now, just wait a moment, Fudge had vanished in a shower of green sparks. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, baby kitten. It's bedtime now. Sleep well. I love you. Good night.